And a good afternoon and happy new year to all of our listeners out there for Upstate Outdoors on 106.3 WORD. I'm Philip Gentry along with Tommy Springer.
Happy hunting and fishing new year.
That's right. Doing it all over again.
And the sun's shining, Philip.
And the sun's shining. I saw your Facebook page where it was a little bit of a peek through yesterday evening.
Oh my gosh.
After all the rain. And I thought, and then I heard it raining a little bit last
night.
Moneypenny gets up, she turns the blinds down. We're like, we're enjoying the sunshine.
Moneypenny
like,
can't see the screen.
Anyway, so we got a great show for you today. We're fresh off a week or so, holiday break, and we got a great show coming up for you. We're going to finally got a hold of Bart Littlejohn down at Carolina Farm and Wildlife Supply and Pauline.
He might have had a break in his action, you know?
Well, finally got a hold of Bart. Been trying to get him on the show before the holidays, and went in there sometime, and talked to Bart, and he goes, "What are we going to talk about? Deer season's over." I said, "That's what we're going to talk about. Deer season's over. It's time to do the wrap-up."
Right.
And so we're going to talk with Bart, and looking back and then looking forward, and you know, there's always something to do, and so looking forward to talking with him. And then we're switching that up,
okay?
And then we're going to jump into the Upstate Outdoors blog, talking about the weather running out from under you. But it may not store this in the back of your mind,
okay?
Because it's the Upstate Outdoors blog is about making the best of rainy winter fishing.
I was actually able to throw the fluke off of my back porch a couple times just to watch the action.
Yeah, running through the backyard.
I'm not making that up.
So although the sun is out today, of course, there's still a bunch of rain.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, a bunch of runoff.
Yeah.
Everywhere. But
everywhere.
So we'll talk about that, how to make the best of, you know, the good thing about this winter is, yeah, there's a lot of water, but it's not as cold as you'd expect.
And I've been
be
thinking about that too, PG.
It's still a little warmer, so maybe we'll have kind of a mild winter. Would be looking forward to that. And, of course, in the spring, love to have all that rain. But then we're going to talk about an article from CarolinaSportsman.com about hunting coyotes. Does hunting coyotes reduce their population? Well, if you do subtraction, you would think yes.
You would think.
But there's some research to suggest that those animals actually their breeding is kind of based on how many numbers there are around. In other words, if there's a shortfall of population, then they catch up. And if there's not, then they kind
of,
you know,
lay off of
I got
it.
A headache.
Yeah.
So
well said, Philip.
So we'll talk about that, and then in the second hour, don't want to get into this a whole lot, but it is the 50-year anniversary of Lake Kiwi.
Wow.
And I got this from an article that was on the Greenville Online about how the lake has changed the lives of many folks around the upstate. And certainly it has. I mean, because Duke Power has been especially if you get over into the Pickens-Oconee area.
True.
A major employer for a lot of folks. A lot of folks who built that facility, construction workers, then turned around and got jobs in the plant.
Right.
And so Duke's been a big influence, along with the lake, too. And a lot of folks enjoy that lake. So we'll talk about that a little bit. And then Springer's going to bring us the Roadkill Cafe.
Venison cube steak and gravy, thanks to the deer slayer, Philip Gentry.
Oh, yeah. Man, I've been between eating Florida fish and deer,
yeah.
I don't think I've eaten anything else.
Yeah. Philip gave me a wonderful, me and Moneypenny as well, wonderful Christmas present before the holidays started. And I was like, good God, Philip.
Yeah, I found one. It was freshly killed. Down on Highway 56. Yeah,
nice and wrapped in white packages as well.
There you go.
I appreciate it.
So then we're going to have a pretty cool interview with a friend of mine, Pete Rogers. Pete Rogers, outdoor writer and photographer, starting a new venture. He's going to be a podcast host, and the name of the podcast is going to be Off Grid with Ralph and Vicky C. and Cirilla. And if you're familiar with Ralph and Vicky, they're longtime archery hunters, travel all over the country, actually all over the world.
True.
And so they're putting together a podcast, and, you know, that's the new technology wave of things. Is you got a lot, and of course, Ralph and Vicky do a TV show, and they do a lot of different stuff. They've been probably the longest standing real tree, pro team,
especially husband and wife team.
Yeah, husband and one of the first husband and wife. So we'll talk with Pete. Pete's going to be a podcast host. I was giving him some pointers. He said, oh, well, we're going to have editors. I said, editors? Yeah, ain't no editors. I said, man, you got to do live.
Got to do it live, man.
Live talk.
Button comes on, you got to do.
He said, well, we'll get into some of that. So yeah, we'll talk with Pete a little bit and talk about his new venture. And then we're going to wind up the show with the calendar of events.
I do have a handful.
A handful?
And one of them includes you. I'm going to pick your brain about.
Yeah, okay. Well, pick away. And then for our parting shot, I hate to jump into Bigfoot.
Might as well.
Right off, but we got a Bigfoot story. Not so much about Bigfoot,
it's
but
hilarious.
Just the Bigfoot culture.
Yeah.
And I think we had talked about this.
I briefly.
Back maybe in 2018 about a college course.
Yeah.
Of studying Bigfoot, surrounding mm-hmm. Bigfoot, and class is in session.
Yeah. Another fine way for all
Bigfoot
these adults to send their children for their
it's
well-rounded education.
It's called an elective.
Okay, gotcha.
So what'd you do with your time during the holidays?
Watched it rain.
Watched it rain.
And watched you and Amy down in Florida.
Yeah, we had a good
on
time.
On Facebook page.
We had a good time.
Because that was the only brightness that was going on around here, because it was dismal, man.
I tell you, we got down to Pine Islands, where we were, and fished down around Port Charlotte area, Charlotte Harbor. And I tell you, fishing down there is entirely different from anything I've ever done along the South Carolina coast, basically because there's what she's talking about. Oh, well, what's the tide going to be? I said, who cares?
The tide doesn't make that big a difference.
It's going to be 4 inches.
4 inches.
Between,
high
tide and low tide. In most of the time, what we're dealing with was the wind.
Yes.
And wind moves more water than the tide does. And, of course, in South Carolina, it's going to drop 5, 6, 7 feet between mm-hmm. tides. So it's like fishing in a river, and in a very murky river in South Carolina almost all the time. But down there, everything's clear and doesn't move a whole lot, and you'd think it'd be perfect. But, I mean, you pull up and look around and go, ain't a fish here.
And you basically are looking and you're seeing the bottom,
yeah.
The structure,
yeah.
Everything.
But we had kind of a run-in with some birds there, too.
I've seen that. That's pretty cool.
I guess there's not a whole lot of bait fish there, because anytime you throw a surface bait,
they own it.
I mean, it'd be a bird come from out of nowhere.
6 miles away.
Yeah, 6 miles away, and it'd be like, whoosh. I mean, I got more fight out of birds. I hooked a couple of terns.
And you did a fine job, because, those things are really ticked off when you...
Yeah. When you get them in...
They're ticked, man.
You get them in, they're mad.
Yes, extremely mad.
I learned to use the net and get one in the net.
Excellent.
And then you got to hold them down and not hurt them.
Right.
And fortunately, I didn't get a hook in any meat.
Good.
The hook just went into some of those dense feathers.
Feathers.
So you kind of
work it out.
So, yeah. I'm coming back from Florida fishing trip. I'm like, I caught 2 terns, man. They put up a good fight on top water.
Stripped off 50 yards of line.
Yeah. So we had a great time. I ate mullet for the first time.
Yeah, you said it didn't do nothing for you.
Not a fan.
And I told you the deal with mullet. You know, it's got to depend on where those mullet come from. If those mullet are feeding on mud a lot, not so much. But if you catch them on the Gulf side where they're filtering sand through their mouth to get their food, it's a big difference.
Best I know, these were from the Gulf, and I mm-mm.
Okay.
So the dip was okay. And I'll say this, any fish that you catch fresh and fry up,
awesome,
is better than something that you
maybe had in the freezer
grill
for a while.
Or stew, or and I don't know if they froze it or anything like that, but I went into a place and had a sampler platter. It had blackened mullet, fried mullet, and smoked mullet dip.
Wow.
And the fried mullet was the only thing I could
stomach.
Well, I got about half of it down, and I was like, yeah, okay.
It's okay, Philip.
I tried mullet.
It takes,
I liked it much better as a hairstyle than as a
Them fools down there where I live at, or where I used to live at back in the day, they eat the roe, too. They just fry it up and eat it as well.
Yeah, of course, they eat king mackerel, too, so what does that tell you?
True enough.
Yeah, well, let's go to our break, and then we're going to grab Bart Littlejohn, manager from Carolina Farm and Wildlife Supply. It is Youth Day, so there's some youth out there deer hunting.
Right.
But we'll talk to Bart and get a wrap-up deer season, see how it went for the Upstate.
Right here on Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD, the Upstate's talk station. Tommy Springer, Philip Gentry, and Money Penny back in the saddle again. Stay tuned. We're going to talk to Bart Littlejohn when we return from these messages. Yeah. Some old school 80s music there, buddy.
There you go. Well, those of you who are not in the woods with a kid today, because it is Youth Day, are lamenting, same as I am, about the end of the 2018-19 deer hunting season. And I don't know. I was telling Springer, I don't know what to do with myself, man. Friday afternoon, Saturday morning, I just get him wandering around the house. I don't know what to do.
We keep getting weather like this. Yeah. Please, Lord. Yeah, I'm sure you'll find something to do.
Yeah. Well, so we got our buddy Bart Littlejohn from Carolina Farm and Wildlife Supply down on Highway 56 in Pauline. Bart, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So, looking back at 2018, Bart, I mean, you got pretty much Carolina Farm and Wildlife Supply is the gateway to
God's country.
Game Zone 2. God, I don't know if I call Game Zone 2 God's country.
I do.
It's kind of the gateway to Game Zone 2 that way. You get a lot of folks, a lot of traffic come through there, and so you hear a lot of stuff. What's if you were looking at the end of the season, looking back, what were some of the reflections that you've got on the past season?
We had a lot of people coming in, and you know, early season I think went pretty well for a lot of folks. You know, we had good weather for it. It was a little bit cooler early season, mid season too. The biggest complaints or biggest downfall to it was in the late season. I mean, we were just so wet.
Yep.
You know, that killed a lot of people's motivation and killed a lot of deer movement too. Plus, we had a little bit of lack of acorns this year, and end of the season, the last day of the season, it was 65 degrees sitting in a deer stand, and you're just like, this is not deer hunting weather at all.
Yeah.
Definitely the weather played a big factor in it for especially the harvest number this year, I think.
And looking back in October, talking with several deer processors, and that can kind of give you a skewed vision of the harvest numbers because – they said, well, so-and-so, there's like three or four in the upstate that closed down, so their numbers increased from that traffic. But pretty much, by and large, what all the processors told me was in October, man, they were just, once gun season opened, they were all overwhelmed with a lot of deer being killed early on.
Oh, absolutely. We heard the same thing. All the processors around here, there were several that, by midday on Saturday, they had to shut the doors because they had no room in their coolers.
Yeah,
they were just filling up so quickly.
Yep, and the bow season's kind of like you said. Bow season comes and goes so quickly, and I only spend we had 2 weekends of bow season, and then 1 weekend of muzzleloader season, and those were fairly warm, and in the bow and once the muzzleloader season got it did start to moderate a little bit in the temperature, but again. Just to mention what you said, not a whole lot of acorns this year.
No, not at all. And that was surprising you. You would think we had a decent amount of rain this summer, and you would think that would help with the crop some this year. But it was hard to find them. If you found them, there were select areas that were more dense with them than most. But on my properties, we couldn't find any good crop to actually make it worthwhile hunting over.
Did you see any really nice bucks come in, or hear about any nice? I mean, like. Out of the ordinary bucks being killed this year?
Yeah, there was a few killed early season. What was real surprising to me is there was a lot of big bucks killed the first and second week of December. I saw more on some of the processors posting some pictures up, more better quality deer killed then than any other dates during the season. And that's a little bit odd. I do think that there is kind of a little post rut right there in the first and second week of December. But it was it was warmer then, and it was very surprising because with the rain as well that those amount of bucks were killed right in that little short time frame.
And I can agree to that too. I mean, this year seemed to me like everybody was talking about the phrase the lockdown. When the rut occurred, and my experience, I don't know if you had this same experience too. But when they were actively breeding, my numbers went way, way down. The only thing that I was seeing in the woods were the youngsters out wandering around going, Mom, Dad told me to get away from them. I don't know what's going on. So that's the only deer that I saw.
Yeah, I agree with that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, as far as, looking at all the wet weather, and, of course, you folks do a lot with food plots and planting and stuff like that. Did you have good success out of the food plots that you planted this year?
Yeah, food plots did great, especially, you know, we did have a lot more moisture this year. And really, to be honest with you, some of the food plots got hit so hard from being grazed on, we had to go back and refertilize some of them to get them to jump back up because the deer just got on them so hard.
Yeah.
But we had real good success, and hearing from a lot of other folks, they had some good success with a lot of their food plots as well. Luckily, this year we didn't have a real bad armyworm problem that would have wiped out pretty much everybody's food plots, but they did very, very well this year.
Yeah, this year probably the biggest problem with food plots instead of armyworms would be sea worms, right? Coming in with the tide. I tell you,
your food plot now actually a small pond with wood ducks on
it. Well, I'm gonna tell you, this actually happened, and I've got the photographs to show it. I put a trail camera up on one of the food plots down there in the river bottom. And when, I don't know, the first hurricane that came through, where we got, and it seemed
Florence.
Like that was the one that really saturated the ground, and the water came up. So I'm looking on the trail camera, and it was like over about a 24-hour period. And so, one, there's a nice buck that's walking across the food plot, you know, about 2:30 in the morning. And then the next time the trail camera goes off, all you see is the top of weeds. And I guess the weeds moving where the water was rising, and the trail camera was right at water level, okay? And it didn't see anything, you know, looking at the camera. And obviously the camera went underwater for I don't know how many hours. And then when it came back down, the next picture was three wood ducks swimming in front of the trail camera. And then the next time it went off, the water was completely gone, and there was a little button buck staring at the camera. So it was a complete
–
wow. I named the series High Tide in Union County.
That's pretty good. That's fitting for sure.
And with all this weather, Bart, look into your little crystal ball the best way you can. With all this rain and stuff, what effects maybe will it have on next year's deer herd and population and so forth and so on?
You know, that's hard to say.
I figured.
It have a lot of different effects. If anything, you know, obviously, hopefully, it's definitely going to help with some, you know, your tree production for, you know, they're growing their roots right now for the springtime. How that will transition into food plots next year, and, you know, what kind of acorn crop we have, what will feed deer. I think it will definitely help, you know, the fawns and the mother deer right now that are pregnant. You know, they're going to have plenty of nutrition out there because, you know, we've had so much rain. All your food plots are going to be growing. Everything else in the woods is going to be growing. So I think it probably will help a little, but to say for sure, that's pretty hard to do.
And I mean, looking at that in the immediate, I did not see a lot of turkeys this year. And of course we've had some decline in that. Usually I see a lot of turkeys during deer season, and I'm wondering if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
You know, I did the same. We saw probably average numbers on our place during the spring season, but we did not see nearly the amount of turkeys in the fall and the wintertime during deer season that we'd normally do. So what's, you know, going on there, it could be they've just switched wintering grounds on us. It could be that the numbers are down. It's hard to say on that as well.
And you were talking about that last weekend where it was like 65 degrees, you and Philip, and I seen a lot of pictures of people that were hunting turkeys in full strut.
Oh, yeah.
Gobbling at daylight and so forth and so on.
It's going to get them messed up, Tom.
It's crazy.
Well, looking at moving forward, you know, folks who are managing deer property or maybe getting ready for the 2019 season, where do we go from here? I mean, obviously predator control, because trapping season is in, that's probably going to be the next thing that we work on, you know, trying to make sure that we round up the last, or maybe not the last, but the excess coyotes that we can find.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of things. It's like you said, you wake up Saturday morning and you're twiddling your thumbs trying to figure out what you're going to do today. But there's a lot of stuff you can do. Definitely number one on my list is start your mineral licks. You need to start piling the minerals out, because as soon as your bucks drop their horns, they're going to automatically start growing again. And not only that, but your does that are pregnant, they need those minerals too to have good bone structure for their babies that they're going to be dropping in the springtime. I do a lot of what I call inventory at the end of the year. You go back, put your trail cameras back out or keep them out and see who, you know, who survived the season. That way you can kind of get an idea who you might want to put on the hit list for next year. I would go, you know, shed hunting. That's always fun too, because you can find different areas. Plus you might find a couple good sheds of deer you didn't know were on your property. And then even on down the line, getting into some of your food plot stuff, I would start looking at, you know, possibly doing some early spring liming, you know, maybe February, March. Go ahead and do some soil samples, get lined up to get some lime in there. And like I said, there's a lot of different stuff you could do on your property to enhance it for your fall season.
And talking about trapping, you guys do a lot with trapping supplies and some across-the-counter instruction for folks who are maybe not as familiar with trapping. And I'll tell you this, it's been a couple of years since I actively ran a trap just because of the distance, because you got to check those things every day. But trapping's a lot of fun.
It can be. It's exciting. If, you know, you set your trap line, it's like every morning waking up for Christmas to go see, you know, what have I got today? And it's a lot of people think that it can be difficult and hard, and it can be in some instances, but anybody can do it. There's nothing to it. You just got to have the motivation to do it, and it can only benefit your property. And it doesn't benefit just deer. It benefits your whole entire habitat. I mean, your turkeys, rabbit hunter, I mean, whatever you want, that's going to help you with your predator control.
And I tell you what, the most numerous predator that I saw this year, both at home and in the woods, is dadgum trash pandas, raccoons.
Absolutely. They're worse on your turkey population than a lot of people
Bingo.
Think.
Bingo. Absolutely, Bart. Absolutely.
They are a huge, huge egg killer. Yep. They just absolutely destroy nests, and they're no good. I don't like a coon. I don't like a raccoon, period.
And now, the foothold traps that you use for a coyote, that's not going to be the same thing that you're going to use for a raccoon. There's a whole different trap structure for those animals.
Yeah, they have what they call dog-proof traps, or they're commonly known as coon cuffs, and they strictly only catch, you know, raccoons or possums, and they work really, really well. They're very, very efficient. Now, the foothold traps for the coyotes, too, they can catch coons. Most of the time, that's just too big. You don't need that for a raccoon. So I would recommend the dog-proof traps or the coon cuff.
And that's the one where they stick their hand in and it handcuffs them?
Yep, that's exactly right.
We're giggling about it.
Yeah, and then you come in here and you say, I mean, I've got places I know, especially places where I was feeding.
Good Lord, you had 10, 12 of them.
Yeah, there'd be 10 or 12 of them. And, you know, a couple of them I found where they were drinking beer and playing cards and just having a party down there around my.
Smoking cigars?
Yeah, that's it. And I'm like, what the heck, man?
Oh, my gosh.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
Bart, if folks want to come down there and talk about either you know, this time of year trapping or how to get we've talked about this on the show before, how they can you got to get your samples, soil samples, but you can hook them up with the minerals and the lime and all of the food plot stuff that they need. Where can they find you at?
We're at 2640 Highway 56 in the big city of Pauline, South Carolina.
The gateway to God's country.
Look for the big red building and the huge American flag.
That's right.
Awesome. Well, Bart Littlejohn, Carolina Farm and Wildlife Supply, 2640 Highway 56 in Pauline. They're open Tuesday to Saturday, 8 until 6. And you can give them a call at 864-585-0935. Go down there and see them, man. It's just a cool place to go hang out. And if you can't find nothing else to do, you can look at their big green eggs and talk about cooking.
Yeah.
That's right.
Thank you, Bart. It's always a pleasure, brother.
Thank you all. Y'all have a great afternoon, man.
Yes, sir.
Take care. Big green egg.
Man, I want one of those. That's on my bucket list someday.
Who don't want one? That ain't like the Yeti cooler where you go, man, well, I'd like to have one.
I've cooked
of those.
On a big green egg.
Yeah.
On a fishing boat.
On a fishing boat?
Yeah, that's pretty cool right there.
Maybe one day.
Yeah.
Let's go to our break. When we come back, we'll jump into the Upstate Outdoors blog and talk about how to make the best of rainy day winter fishing. Not today, but you'll need it soon.
Right here at Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD, the Upstate's talk station. Stay tuned.
Well, up until sunrise today, if you're like every other resident of the upstate, you're getting pretty sick and tired of seeing the endless deluge of precipitation fall from the sky.
I would have to agree with
like
you,
a lot of folks are like, look, if I wake up in the morning and it's cloudy, you're going to have to take my belt and shoelaces away from me.
Pretty much. It's been bad.
Now, as we ushered in the new year, the current rainfall levels were dramatically above normal seasonal rainfall amounts. Now, the upside for anglers is that all the winter rain combined with the moderate air temperatures for this time of year has a silver lining. If you had to pick a pivotal number for water temperatures during the winter, and we're talking about fishing here, it's 50 degrees. Water temperatures below the 50-degree mark are generally unfavorable when it comes to fish activity. Basically, they get cold.
Yep.
They don't move around a lot. Their metabolism slows down and all that. Now, fish may feed sporadically in lower water temperatures below 50, but their metabolism slows down, and they really only feed enough to survive. Now, conversely, when water temperatures are above the 50-degree mark, that's enough to keep fish interested in feeding most any time the opportunity arises. And currently, in this weather and sunshine today is going to help increase that number. The water temperatures on our area lakes are right around the magical 50-degree mark. The mercury dips during the cold fronts and then rises during sunny and warmer days like today. Now, in the southeast United States, rain typically comes on the warmer side of a front. It'll cloud up, rain, and, you know, be warmer. And then you get the colder weather, colder and clear, after the front passes. Now, the net effect on our reservoirs is that warmer rain has or is making its way into the lake before the cooler air temperatures arrive. Now, accordingly, if the main lake surface water temperatures are in the upper 40s, and we're probably like that, like I said, now.
I would think so, Philip.
And then the rains occur, it's a pretty safe bet that the tributaries where the water's coming in, running into the lake, they're going to be warmer than the rest of the lake. Now, bear in mind, warmer or cooler temperatures are relative. We're not talking about 10-degree difference.
Right.
We're talking about just a couple of degrees difference. Just enough to, you know, tip it above that, or if it's right at 50, 55 is even better. Now, be sure to check your water temperatures compared to the main body of water. Colder water inflows are bad, and they can shut fishing down, while warmer water inflows, again, relative to the main body, draw fish to the source of the water. The inflowing water during the winter has several positives. Aside from the aforementioned warmer temperature, it also brings current. And you know as well as I do, current spurs feeding.
It's the key.
And nearly all species of fish, and rain also washes sediment into the water. Sediment traps heat, therefore leveraging the warming factor and helps raise the surrounding water temperatures. Bait fish, and this is the key thing here too, bait fish are vulnerable to cold shock when the water temperatures range below about 45 degrees, so they're always going to be seeking that warmer water for survival. And they get in that warmer water, and the predators follow. Now, sediment also reduces visibility, something I wish I had in Florida. Actually, we did have somewhat reduced visibility in some areas, but that was from the algae and red tide, and I won't get into all that.
Yeah, but, I thought about you.
When sediment reduces visibility, the generally gin-clear waters of our upstate lakes, it's an advantage for the predator fish because they can kind of sneak in and ambush prey. Now, all of the above makes perfect sense on a one-time or sporadic basis, okay? But since it's been raining steadily several days a week since about late October, much of the water quality in our reservoirs has turned from stained to, I'm talking about outright, you could plant
Yahoo chocolate, baby.
You could plant corn in it. You know, if you're fishing with corn, it's going to sprout while you got it on the hook.
In less than 48 hours.
Yeah, it's like I casted some corn out there and I came in and it had a bud on it.
And a stalk.
Let's see. Similarly, water inflows from tributaries that create fishable current are now raging torrents, and that sends fish elsewhere to look for refuge. So what do? Too much water flow and too much muddy water definitely can be a negative, so you want to look instead for secondary tributaries that supply water to the lake. And here's something a lot of people never think about. You know, if you go into any of our lakes, almost all of our lakes have kind of a wedge shape. The coves are wedge shaped, and there may not be anything actively coming into the back of the cove, you know, during normal times.
True.
It may just be a ditch.
Right.
Okay.
With a little trickle.
Yeah, but now
it's a river.
That little trickle, it may not be, and I'm talking about secondary.
Right.
If you just got a ditch, you're going to get that runoff from the surrounding area, so you're going to have that water coming in that's a secondary inflow, and that's really what you want to concentrate on. And when these conditions occur, and I'm talking about the excess rain, anglers may witness a reversal of normal water conditions where the main lake is actually muddier than the water that's coming in because there's been so much mud and it's moving downstream. Now, in this situation, keying on the upper reaches of the reservoir, the backs of smaller creeks and coves with ditch runoff in the back, often provides the best fishing. Now, even when fishing relatively warmer water in the winter, you got to expect fish to be less aggressive than you would in the spring and the summer. You want to slow down your presentation, paying particular attention to keeping your lure or bait in proximity to fish holding structure. Stumps, docks, man-made cover, anything like that. A lot of rocks. I love to fish rocks this time of year because the rocks absorb some of the sunshine, and that heats it up even more. Now, finally, you want to match your offerings to the size prey the fish are eating. In the wintertime, that typically means threadfin shad. Of course, that depends on which body of water you're fishing, but a threadfin shad less than about 3 inches long. A slow or sluggish fish is hesitant to chase a larger prey that will have difficulty swallowing and digesting because its metabolism is slower.
Bingo.
So you want to go small. And small and slow.
Yep.
But there's still a lot of really good wintertime fishing. Even in these conditions, you just got to pick your spots.
And let me elaborate it for the small body of water fishermen, a.k.a. ponds, small places. Right now, with the weather conditions we have and all the water, those areas where that water is coming into these small bodies of water, pond, whatever, those are hot places right now, especially if we get a sunshine today. You're talking 2.5 feet of water up at that end.
Yeah.
And that's where the action is right now. I mean, I seen it the other day. I actually caught some fish in the mud because of the situation.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, is a lot of people think about wintertime fishing. Oh, I got to fish deep. I got to fish deep.
Depends.
And you would if we don't have this warmer rainwater coming in. But you got to look. During the wintertime, normally the deeper water will actually be warmer.
Yep.
Or even the surface of deeper water. But fish, you know, they typically will go deep in a normal winter. But if you got a lot of rain runoff that's bringing that warmer water in and that sediment, fish don't care.
No.
I mean, they'd be in 3, 4, 5 feet of water. And that astounds a lot of people. I had a friend of mine who was like, I can't believe he's catfishing. He said, man, I'm catching these 15, 20-pound catfish in less than 5 feet of water.
Yep.
And I texted him back. I said, I'll guarantee you're somewhere around a creek or a ditch or something coming in. He said, absolutely.
Yep.
You know, it would be a delta.
Yeah.
You know, ordinarily, this real shallow water, but they're sitting in there feeding, waiting on stuff to come by.
Exactly.
So
good tips.
And it works for bass, stripers, especially stripers this year. And they got the big Striped Bass Challenge going on at Lake Hartwell.
This weekend.
Yeah, going on today. And crappie fishing, bass fishing, whatever you want to do. So
good tips, Pip.
There you go. And we'll go to our break now. When we come back, we'll jump from fishing in the winter to hunting coyotes.
And got a couple of texts here I'm going to pass to PG because he is the man. And we'll take care of that right after these messages. Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD, the Upstate's talk station. Man, that makes me want to get my
burn, baby, burn
stack shoes and my nylon bell bottoms on.
Oh, that's what I thought. Burn, baby,
disco.
Burn. I thought they were talking about all that deer meat I've been eating with the Frank's Red Hot. That's the burn, baby, burn. And if you want to join into the conversation, you can always call us on the Ingalls Advantage Talk Line, 800-347-1063, or you can text Upstate Outdoors on the Common Sense Retirement Planning text line at 71307. And we got a couple of texts in now. We'll start those from the bottom over here.
I sure will. Philip Gentry, have you ever caught anything unusual in that game cam, like the lizard man or any Bigfoot-orientated type creature?
Oriented.
Whatever.
Orientated.
You know, I'm sorry.
That's a Springerism.
Yeah, that's it. That's my own.
To answer the question, no, I've never caught Bigfoot.
Or the lizard
man. I've never caught lizard man. But I did go in, and I think it was, we have not identified the subject yet.
Yes.
But I did get a photograph of a naked man's bottom on one of my trail cameras. And
it wouldn't have nothing to do with your boys, would it?
A couple of years ago. No, we sent that off to Washington, D.C., where they're experts in such analysis.
Okay, I got you.
And to try to figure out who the culprit was.
Okay, but, like being an ass?
Yeah. That pretty much describes everybody I've ever hunted with. So, but no, that's not, in all seriousness, I did this year, I mean, kind of getting off subject, but I actually one of the deer that I killed
right
was captured.
I seen that. That was
on
awesome.
Trail camera
as the bullet busted.
Well, about the time he hit the ground right. and his legs flew up in the air, the trail camera went off.
Cool picture.
So I thought that was a pretty cool picture. And I've gotten some really scary looking coyotes and stuff, which we'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
What's the other text?
Hey guys, since temperatures are in the mid 60s next week, would this be a good time to do some crappie and bass fishing on Lake Lure?
Lake Lure is up around North Carolina. That's going to be what we're talking about. Lake Lure is a very generally clear lake. So if I were going to fish on something like that, I mean, the answer is yes. I don't have any specific reports on Lake Lure, but I would look into the upper reaches where the creek arms are coming
Amen.
In. The bad thing about those North Carolina lakes and stuff is even when the runoff comes in, it runs over sand and rocks and
almost
stuff.
Almost filters it.
And it doesn't get that dirty, but it will put some stain in the water, and that's what I would want on one of
stain
those lakes.
Water.
I would want some stain water. And again, if you've got a temperature sensor on your depth finder, you know, ease up here and look and see if you've got, and I would stick with the same 50-degree mark. Might be a little bit cooler up there if you've got if you can find 3-4 degrees warmer, the fish are going to move to that basically because the bait fish, like I said,
moving to that,
they got to survive.
Yep,
and they're going to move to that, and the predator fish are going to come in there.
Bingo.
And it's pretty much standard almost anywhere you fish. But look for that stain water, and I don't like chocolate stain.
Right.
But if you can find an area where that stain is changing over. I call it kind of an olive-colored water. Mm-hmm. That's always my favorite.
And my 2 cents on that texture, if it's 60 degrees next week like it's supposed to be, and you have time and don't have to go to work, by all means, go fishing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A day fishing beats a day at work anytime.
Oh, okay.
But wanted to mention this briefly. Probably won't have time to discuss all this. Article I got out of Carolina Sportsman about does coyote hunting reduce the coyote population. It's a pretty cool article written by Craig Holt, based out of North Carolina. But the question is, do coyote hunters help decrease the population of the animal? Differences of opinion exist as the overall effect of hunting efforts, especially the big organized hunts on coyote populations. And you see a lot of these coyote challenges, mm-hmm. both in North and South Carolina, where, you know, it's increased push on taking these animals out. And a lot of studies have been done on coyotes, and they say it's especially referencing where out west where they've gone so far as poisoning them.
Yes.
Because they got so bad. And a lot of folks said we spent a lot of time poisoning, and they just kept coming back basically because, you know, their natural instincts, I guess, were to breed more because their numbers were down. And, you know, coyotes, they rely on that pack.
Pack.
And if their pack numbers go down, then,
got to replenish the pack.
Then they're replenishing the pack. So that's kind of where that comes from. Basically, that's I wouldn't think that would be an excuse to say, well, you know, they're gonna make up for whatever I can take out.
Mm.
But you're still looking at taking out numbers. And it's not a one-and-done type thing.
That was what I was fixing to say.
It's not something that you're going to do and they're going to be gone. It's going to be like wild hogs, too. I mean, wild hogs breed so prolifically year-round that, and I've read studies on this, that said if you're not trapping and killing 75 to 80% of the wild hogs, their numbers are increasing.
Absolutely.
And that was something I meant to mention to Bart Littlejohn from Carolina Farm and Wildlife. I only saw one wild hog on either trail camera or with my eyes when I was you know out hunting this year, and it's really funny how that works.
I truly believe it's all the rain. It's pushed them not only from the bottoms where they use, it's even pushed them out further because of all the water filling.
So you'd expect to see them, out a little bit more, and they don't have any problem, you know, being in swampy water, and even to play off of that, I think the deer down around my creek and river bottoms where I hunt. I think the deer got so sick of the water coming up and going down and coming up and going down that they moved inland too.
I would agree.
But I would have thought that I would have seen more hogs because we've got some up and down the property and we see them sporadically. somebody either somebody's got a bunch of them on their property, or I have not trapped hogs in a while.
Awesome.
But let's go to the break, the end of the hour, with the news. When we come back, hour two of Upstate Outdoors.
Right here on 106.3 WORD, the Upstate's talk station. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news, top of the hour.